Under section 44 attempt.
Indeed, there are many aspects of a stop and search as a tool which is used by police in Britain. But the ones that deals with anti-terrorism is things like section 44 and schedule 7, which are most known by a majority of people. Section 44 enables the police to stop anyone in Britain without any reason, without any suspicion, and to question them and search them. These have to be within the designated areas, and the legislation originally meant to have sensitive areas, but in reality, since 9/11, whole of London has been designated and has been repeatedly been part of this process. And this process, in reality, what has happened is that every year there is increase on number of people who are being stopped and searched, and you know it's been going up four times, three times every year.
Control order is one of the measures introduced as part of the Prevention of Anti-Terrorism Act in 2005. It's something that can be issued by the Home Secretary. Basically, a control order is used on individuals who are suspected of committing an act of terrorism, and this entails them not being able to go out at certain times. They could be under curfew for up to 16 hours a day. It will also affect what they can possess, what they can use, whether they can go and work, whether they can do a course at college, and also they may have to surrender their passports. Call up the monitoring company to let them know where they are in the mornings and in the evenings. So basically, it can be seen as a kind of house arrest, or even it's been likened to a prison without bars, even because of the amount of restrictions. And there's also just like an area that they have to stay within. This is all marked out for them.
And the last known figures actually showed that there were 117,000 stop and searches only under Section 44. And out of all those, not a single terrorist had been found. As a matter of fact, since this operation started, from year 2000, the figure shows that this process, although has affected millions of people, but not a single terrorist has been apprehended.
Officer, for and on the record, there will be no need for force or violence.
That's fine.
I will not resist arrest. However,
come on then.
However,
come with me.
Well, I think that the way anti-terror laws have been conceived in Britain and the way they've been used has had a very, very serious effect on the Muslim community. And I think it's also had a very bad effect on the majority community, because what it's tended to do is to say that we've got a problem in this society and it's this Muslim minority that is causing a problem to do with terrorism.
Well, Schedule 7 is probably even much more oppressive because it gives power to police, border agencies and authorities at ports and airports of entry and exit into Britain to stop anyone, again, without any reason, without any suspicion, and keep them up to 9 hours and question them. And indeed, a person has to answer every question. Failure to answer the question could result 3 months imprisonment. Now, you have to actually understand that, this issue of stopping without any reason, why would one human being stop another human being with no reason? Either you stop them randomly, or either you are going to profile them on some sort of basis. No one is going to stop somebody for no reason. You've got to find in your own mind a reason to stop one person and not the other one, unless it's random, or unless everyone is being stopped. And this could only lead to prejudices. And when it comes to the issue of people at the time of traveling, you know, at airports and so forth, we all have traveled. We know that there's a lot of anxiety. You have to catch a plane, you have to go through all these procedures, and there is a lot of anxiety around. To be able for police to stop you and question you for 9 hours, which means you're going to miss your flight and everything else, is indeed very oppressive.
And what that's created in the majority community is an attitude of fear. And I think that the division between Muslims and non-Muslims has increased a great deal because of the anti-terror laws, and the way the anti-terror laws are spoken about by government ministers have created a kind of false reality. And as far as the Muslim community is concerned, it's also brought about a lot of fear inside the Muslim community. And the actual facts of how many young Muslims in particular have been picked up for so many things and almost invariably found not to have anything that they can be charged with has created within the youth of Muslims in Britain a fear of being picked up, a fear of not getting jobs, a fear of being marginalised. And for the next generation, I think this is a very, very serious position.
The type of questions is routinely people are asked, how many times do they pray in a day? Which mosque they go to? What do they think about war in Iraq? And then indeed they are asked in the recent months and years, who did they vote for? I mean, this is outrageous that in a democracy, people are asked who they voted for, and if they refuse to answer, they will get 3 months imprisonment. And this is really nothing to do with the issue of terrorism. We have asked the authorities to highlight what sort of intelligent gathering is this? Which political party is more likely to turn someone into a terrorist?
As well as that, I think that the way some of the most draconian parts of the anti-terror laws have been used, I talk about the detention without trial in Belmarsh, which continued for a long time, the use of deportation proceedings against refugees to send them back to places that they've already come from as refugees, the use of house arrest, which in Britain is called control orders. Although these things have been used against a fairly small minority of people, within the Muslim community, they have created tremendous resentment and fear. But on the other hand, suppose they didn't do anything, then I myself could at any time be picked up, or my son can be picked up and put away. And I think that what the kind of spirit of fear that DAS has produced, as I said, in the majority community, but also within the Muslim community, is very, very negative. And I think the kind of respect that young Muslims have for authority in this country, either for the government, for the judiciary, for the police, has gone right down because of what they perceive as tremendous unfairness against them.
There was a case recently of a young man going into the underground, had 15 police officers, commando style, attack on him. He was forced on the floor with gun put back of his head. He actually said that he thought he's a goner. He started thinking about his children. His whole life came in front of his eyes. And the reason he was put through that process was because he was reading a book which was in Arabic, and that was reported, and that was triggered the whole thing. That sort of abuse, unfortunately, is taking place all the time. And majority of people are not just complaining about the fact that they are profiled and they are being stopped, which they do, but majority are complaining because of the behavior of the police, the way that the police is abusive. They turn around and say, I'll stop you because I don't have to have a reason. And they say, well, why do you stop me? Why not the person who's walking next to me? And the police says, I don't need to have a reason. But the reality is, there is a profiling of Muslim, profiling of people from Asian background or those who perceive to be Muslim.
The main effect, which has been highlighted by government ministers, healthcare professionals and human rights organisations, is a deterioration in mental health. I mean, you've got a situation here where a person has been put under severe restrictions. Well, it could be severe, but all levels of restrictions, and they haven't been told why. They haven't been charged with anything. They haven't been imprisoned. So they're literally being told, well, you know, we're going to put these restrictions on you. We can't tell you why because it's a threat to national security. I can give you an example of quite a famous case of Mahmoud Abu Rida.
I don't know anything. The secret against me. He told me secret. I can't give to you.
So they haven't told you what it is?
No, I don't have trial, no charge. And he arrested me in December 2001.
What was that like?
Like he's coming 30 people maybe, immigration, Scotland Yard, my 5 and 6, broken my door, front door and back door. And my wife, she's sleeping, he dressed pajama, sleeping clothes, and me the same. He put me on the floor, put my hand in the back, handcuff, and one police, he have clothes, special clothes, he put the legs in my back, and he crushed like, push me, and he's fat guy, and I'm crying. I still have back pain. He told me, shut up, close your mouth, terrorist. And he take me quickly to Belmarsh. To my home, to single cell in Belmarsh. I don't go to police station. I don't know any, don't give me any charge, don't give me anything.
So this individual doesn't know why they have to live with these restrictions. And on a day-to-day level, it's actually curbing their whole kind of mundane things, day-to-day things that we all do. For example, when they wake up, they have to report to the police or the monitoring company where they are. They may not be able to go out. They may not be able to go to the park, go to the mosque, go shopping with their families, have any trips, just things like that. They may not have internet access, telephone access. People who come to visit them have to be approved by the Home Office as well. So all of this, you can imagine, is kind of a stifling environment where they're literally kind of stuck in their own homes for up to 16 hours a day. This, and without any reason why.
You stay in single cell in the unit, 23 hours. And 23 hours in single cell. You can't see the sky, you can't see the sun. Cage to cage to cage to cage, you know. You can't see anything. Or the light, too many light. You don't know the day, night, day.
So it causes a lot of kind of resentment, anger, frustration, even paranoia, because they could be electronically tagged as well. Another issue which has really, you know, affected these individuals is where the monitoring company or the police can call throughout the night as many times as they like, and their houses could get raided quite regularly, mainly during the night. So this again, that they're in a kind of a constant state of agitation and stress, where they don't know. I mean, you know, is my house going to be raided while my children are asleep? Well, I mean, there was one lady who had, the wife of one individual under control order, who had to sleep with her hijab on and or fully covered, because she didn't know whether the house was going to be raided.
The officer coming in my single cell, he told me, "You bastard Muslim, sorry for the word," shouting me, swearing me, push me, kick me too many times.
His mental health was affected to such a level where he said himself he carried razors around with him. He actually attempted suicide 3 times. Even when he was hospitalized, Mozambique went to visit him, but then Mozambique was banned from visiting him because that again would breach the restrictions that was placed on them. So this was an individual who was actually sectioned under the Mental Health Act, getting treatment, getting psychiatric treatment, and yet they wouldn't allow a visitor to come in and offer kind of support.
I'm coming from Palestine, from Israeli torture, and I find torture in Britain, more in Israel. And I want to know, is there asylum from the Britain?
Like so many men detained under secret evidence in the United Kingdom, Abu Rida says his life has been ruined. His family, unable to live under the restrictions of a control order, have left him for Jordan. He wants to join them, but doesn't have a valid travel document.
Well, I think the idea that there is a constant threat in Britain is something that is hammered by the authorities through the media all the time, and in a way it's a control mechanism. Of course it's true that very, very serious misuse of influence on young people was behind what happened on 7/7, and the young people who took those 53 lives and their own lives is completely tragic. But the idea that Britain is full of young Muslim men who are waiting to do this kind of thing, I think is a complete myth. And what is never brought out is that there is, in fact, a very severe threat on the right, and the rise of racism in Britain, which has happened as a consequence of the way the government has chosen to play this war on terror, that is also very, very serious. And is probably more serious than the idea that a handful of young men, most of whom do not come from very advantaged backgrounds, and many of them are Muslim converts who appear to show some indications of quite troubled lives beforehand, that they have been prey to the people who have been behind things like 7/7. It's not that our society is full of people who want to do this kind of thing. That's a myth.
I wouldn't necessarily say this is kind of a new problem or something. I mean, we all know with the recently in the 70s, 80s, 90s with the IRA. I mean, with that there was actual bombings all over the country. So this it's not necessarily a new phenomenon. I mean, it's wrong on many levels, because what you're actually doing is taking a person because you don't have enough evidence to charge them and imprison them. Because you see, these people are kind of like in a type of limbo. There's not enough evidence to have that would carry a jail sentence, but that it's under suspicion that, oh, these people fit a certain profile, they might hold certain ideological views, so automatically they're guilty. What this does is it criminalizes a whole section of the community. So it's just completely counterproductive. I mean, how are you going to challenge, you know, extreme ideas and extreme ideologies by criminalizing the community, especially when the majority of the community don't hold those ideas? You know, you've actually caused more hostility and distrust and fear.
Well, I think one of the great problems of this anti-terror laws is the way the government has managed to get people, mainly through the media, to feel that we actually know things about these people. And if you knew what we knew, you wouldn't complain about human rights violations and things like that. And that has had a very, very negative effect both within both communities, the Muslim community and the non-Muslim community. But at the same time, there's been a bit of a backlash because as the courts over the last year and a half have been battling the security services on so many issues to do with torture, to do with Guantanamo, to do with torture in Pakistan and many, many other issues around this kind of so-called terror area. And again and again, the security services and the Home Office have lost in the courts. I think that people who read the newspapers carefully or who follow the media carefully are now very skeptical. And this also is not good for the government and for authority and for the cohesion of the society, because all the time the people in authority are indicating that they're prepared to go to huge lengths in the judicial system, and then to be turned out to be wrong.
For us to actually address this issue and move forward, we need to do a number of things. And I think it's very important to recognize that profiling people is actually counterproductive. You know, those who committed 9/11 and 7/7, they didn't have turbans on, they didn't have long beards, they didn't actually go around with the traditional Muslim dress. They didn't look like imam and people coming out of the masajids. To go and then look for that type of person, it shows that what is kicking in is prejudices, is the stereotyping, rather than intelligent, because would-be terrorists will go out of their way not to look the part. Obviously, they're not stupid. And you know, while they're looking with people with long beard and turbans and so forth, someone dressed up as a punk or anything else will go and blow everybody up. And this so is counterproductive. But also the fact that, you know, is oppressing ordinary innocent people. You can't really go around and say that you want to give a message to terrorists, but what you're giving message to ordinary innocent Muslims who are actually against terrorism. They're victims of it, if anything else. You're targeting them as a means of giving message to the terrorists. This is actually, again, is counterproductive, and really it doesn't address the issue. The other thing is actually the experience that people have got. The encounter that they've got with the police officer is so negative. You know, police officers are stopping someone and saying, I have the right and I could do whatever I want. You have no right, I could keep you for 9 hours. What they do, they stop a young student, you know, who's just arriving and needs to catch the last sort of bus to its city at 11 o'clock. And he says, I have to leave by 11, otherwise I miss my bus and I have nowhere to stay. So they keep him until 5 past 11, and then they say, no, you could go. This doesn't make anyone safe. This doesn't make anyone secure. What it does is actually says that this is an oppressive system. It creates us and them. And it actually moves away from the concept of all of us coming together and addressing every serious issue of terrorism.
Well, I think there are two very important alternatives to having the terror laws. First of all, if Britain did away with the use of secret evidence, all these people who are held on detention bail or held under house arrest, and people have been held in this country for, in some cases, as much as 10 years without ever having a proper hearing, which in a democratic country is completely scandalous. If the secret evidence and secret special courts were not used, and there was actually a transparent judicial process, which there have been in many cases very successfully, and people who plan, for instance, the bombings of airlines using bottles of orangeade and so on, that all went through the courts, and in some cases through several appeals, and it was a transparent process that everybody could judge for themselves what was really going on. If the authorities relied more on a normal judicial process and less on doing secret things as the security services would like, I think that would be a very, very important contribution. But the other thing is, British foreign policy is without any doubt a very major cause of dissent, particularly among young people of Muslim and non-Muslim, but very specifically to take the Muslim community, that when you have demonstrations against the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, against the Israeli invasion of Gaza, you can see in those demonstrations a huge mixture of British people, but there is also a core of very troubled, particularly troubled Muslim youth, both girls and young men. And any attempt by the government to discuss with them British foreign policy, to modify some of British foreign policy aims, instead of pretending that it's all right and that actually these wars are of some benefit to Britain, I think that would really take the sting out of a lot of the feelings of rage that you feel among young Muslims.
Yeah, I mean, there's at the moment there is obviously human rights organisations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and they've written to the government about control orders, because control orders have to be approved by Parliament each year. So beforehand, usually these human rights organisations kind of write to them. Also, there are many Muslim organisations, Cage Prison, Islamic Human Rights Commission, just kind of the socialist movement, you know, generally there's quite a strong opposition to control orders amongst within the community.
Well, I think it's a myth that we are in a completely new situation about our security. And those were the words that both Bush and Blair said immediately after 9/11. And we all know that what that led to was the most horrendous series of practices in Guantanamo, in Abu Ghraib, in Bagram, and the kind of poison that has spread throughout the world by these practices, which were made supposedly legitimized by the war on terror, I think has had a very, very bad effect both on American society, on America's standing in the world, and also on Britain's own society and the attitudes that other people have to Britain, because we haven't stood out against torture. When we say, or people in our government say, we don't believe in torture, we don't do torture. And we have in our society many very articulate young men who have been tortured in Guantanamo, who've been tortured in Bagram, who've been tortured in Pakistan. And in almost all these cases, they are able to say that British agents were present and knew what was happening to them. This is a whole new phenomenon of why we have so much tension around these issues within our society.
Thank you.